This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hello, everybody. We are back at the Minnesota State Fair. Very nice round of applause. Thank you so much. The man to my left who is about to sit down is one of the true greats in journalism, in television, in radio, and just a quality human being. The legend himself, Don Shelby, is here. How about a round of applause for Mr. Shelby?
Thank you very much, everyone. It's great to be back on CCO. It's great to be back at the Minnesota State Fair because we've spent a lot of time. This man has been out here 390 days. Yes. I've been out here 320 days, so more than a work year of our lives have been spent at the Minnesota State Fair.
That is correct. Yeah. That is accurate. We both have been out here a great deal. Okay, since you walked away from TV, how often do you come to the State Fair just to walk around?
Well, if I'm feeling really neglected, if I'm feeling that, and I'm feeling it more often these days because at least half of the population now, because I retired 13 years ago, have no idea who I am. So if you notice, and we'll explain this for the radio audience, I wear purposely a CBS News hat so somebody will recognize me.
Well, I have to tell this too. I saw you earlier in the day. You didn't see that I saw you, and you had this coat on. I'm Don Shelby, and I'm a big bleeping deal. I thought that was impressive that you had that jacket, just to make sure that people realized who you are. How is it possible it was 13 years ago? Does it seem like it was yesterday to you? Does it seem like a lifetime ago? Because it was a lifetime for you. Journalism, yeah, television.
To tell you the truth, I feel blessed that I'm not in journalism anymore.
How come?
First of all, during the period of time that what I would refer to as a golden age, but I think a lot
sheet.
Of people...
There goes the sheet.
A lot of people would
Thank
say
you,
that anyone in any period of... work would say they worked in the golden age.
Yeah.
No matter what it is. People today will say they are currently in the golden age. But I do believe, and I think I could prove that practically, that coming out of Cronkite, coming out of the history of Edward R. Murrow, coming out of Severide, and then developing a television product in Minnesota, which required not just popularity but required some actual news, because this is a very literate audience who expect news to be news. But then at some point news was turned over to the marketers, and the marketers looked at demographics and said, oh, only the 18 to 35 demo is important.
Yeah, right.
So here's maybe some news to y'all. WCCO-TV had what we call boxcar numbers. The largest number of people in the state of Minnesota turned to WCCO-TV for news. You would think that'd make you number one.
It should. I mean, when I hear that, it has to be number one.
We were number two. Because even though we had more people turning to us and trusting us for news, more people between the 18 and 35 year gap were watching Channel 11.
Okay. Yep. The
demo. That is the demo that the advertisers sell. So it turned from, who do we serve, the general public, or do we serve just this tiny group?
Yeah.
And so the stories started to change. And we'd ask them, the audience, marketers would ask the audience, what would you like to see on the news?
Right.
Well, that was the end of an era because the newsroom usually decided, and a child could figure out what the lead should be, the most important thing that happened on a given day or a given month. They were picking stories that were identified as being important to that one group.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll tell you a true story, and then you'll go to a break. Here is the story.
He still knows radio very well. He knows when the breaks are. I mean, that's a pro right there.
During the crisis that involved whether we were trading weapons with Iran to sell
the
drugs
Contras.
To the Contras.
Yep.
We led with General Selkirk's testimony in that trial.
Yep.
General Selkirk was a retired Air Force general, a civilian who had called in airstrikes on Nicaragua.
Yes.
Okay?
Central figure. Huge part
Central
of the story.
Figure, but he's a civilian. He's not in the chain of command. He is no longer military, but the violation of the principles of the Constitution were so great that I petitioned that we should lead with this horrible violation of democracy, that a civilian could call in deadly airstrikes on another civilian population, unelected, totally unelected.
I mean, just think about that. That is frightening consequences and power, which this individual should absolutely, positively not have.
Absolutely right. Now, here's the story. So you see the importance of that story. We didn't win the night. Another station, which I'll not name, did win the night by countering our lead with a squirrel caught in a downspout that the fire department had to come and rescue the squirrel.
Yeah.
They killed us in the ratings.
Yep.
One doing news.
Think about it.
One doing something that was not news. And I saw that train coming down the track, and so I said, you know, my stuff doesn't
play as well.
Doesn't play anymore. Yep. People are not listening to me at the management level. And so I used to win 98 out of 100 arguments on substance versus style.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 2 years of my work at CCO, I didn't win 2 arguments out of 100. And so I went, okay, you don't need me anymore.
Yeah. By the way, how old are you?
I am now 77.
You sound as sharp as ever.
Oh,
how about a round of applause for Don Shelby? Let's pause. Don is with us. We're out here at the fair, our standard location. We got the state fair in front of us. We got the Republicans of the right. We got Sweet Martha's. Stop on by. We'd love to see you. Chad Hartman, Don Shelby, Newstalk 830, WCCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It is a sincere pleasure to start the fair, our run out here, with the great Don Shelby. It's 20 past 12. Chad Hartman here at CCO Radio. Really a nice day to be out here. We got some clouds. We're in the low 70s. And a very... very good crowd. Okay, give me your assessment of political journalism. We're coming up on tonight, the ultimate night for either party when their nominee speaks. The vice president will become the presidential nominee, Kamala Harris. About a month ago, we had the Republicans. What is your sense today, Don? 2024 political coverage compared to, let's go 1974.
Well, 1970 was a completely different year because we had just come out of the 68 convention.
Yep, in Chicago.
And there was a terrible sense of dread about what politics meant. because this was the first time in any kind of political arena where the people had a voice outside of just the delegates inside the convention.
Yep.
And the people were all primarily young. And they actually changed the narrative on both candidates, Richard Nixon and Hubert Humphrey. And I think it was a valuable lesson for us. But there was a downward slope about trust in politics. It rose back up during the Reagan years and then crashed when people realized that trickle-down economics was not going to work and it wasn't helping the average person. So then it lost its politics, politicians, government, lost its shine again. So what I'm trying to show you is a curve that continues, a wave curve that continues.
Yep.
There is good times and there are bad times. And I'm not being political, but I think during the Trump years and because of the things that were being said and the ways they were being said and the January 6, 2021 riots, insurrection, if you will, then it drops back down. And I think that valley has been there for a long time, and even with Joe Biden, because of the fear that Democrats had that maybe the guy may not be capable of winning an election for us and will have an effect on the down ballot races. But suddenly, there is some kind of joy in the Democratic Party.
Well, they used that word about 47 times last night.
And I would have also used it because it's a feeling, even when I watch CNN and they have the Republicans as the counter voices sitting on the set. Termichael, one of them.
Yep, and, Termichael Singleton.
And so they're saying things like this, particularly about the convention, not about the candidates. They're going, they've got that right. They are doing this right. They are saying the right things. There are
especially
some things
considering
out.
If it was Biden right now.
Yes.
If this would have been 4 days of Joe Biden and the debate, is he still sharp enough? Can he do the job?
Yeah.
Forward thinking. It wouldn't have been close. And that doesn't mean everybody has to say they agree with Harris's politics.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about this moment for the Democrats to try to sell their side of the story.
Yeah, so where you were talking about journalism, here's what I think is happening. And one of the things that's good about this, Chad, not being in the business, I can now tell some truth about the business. What I saw through my 60-year career. First of all, I gave a speech one time and it fell flat. And I purposely designed what I was going to say to fall flat. I said, I can now tell you there is one thing that I hate more than anything in the world. Can anyone guess what it is as it relates to my business? And they said, some people said things and some people said nothing.
Paul Majors.
Paul Majors. The thing I hated worse than anything. Although I love the man,
yeah, I
hated the fact that he beat us on the 18-35 demo. But I said, they said, what? And I said, your opinion. I have always despised your opinion because your opinion has no factual basis. And I said, and that fell flat. They went, this is a terrible human being.
Yeah, yeah. What are you saying?
This is what the Constitution says. We have a right to our opinion.
Right.
Yes, you have your right to have an opinion. That doesn't mean that opinion necessarily is right.
Mm-hmm.
But television today is filled with people expressing their opinions. Not men on the street, but they have experts. Experts. Only speculating.
Yeah, right.
Only giving their opinions. And opinions are not worth anything. So when I got them back this way. And I said, not only do I hate your opinion, I hate mine. My opinion has no place in the public dialogue. The same way that a jury is sitting, listening to evidence, a prosecution presents a certain side, defense presents a certain side, all of it is evidence. The jury goes into a deliberation room and sorts through it all and reaches a conclusion. Conclusion is an important word. I've looked at, as the evidence, the jury says, we have looked at all the evidence, and this rises above everything for not guilty or guilty. Some evidence is more important than others. So the issue was, you're not told to go into the jury room and return with your opinion, because your opinion is formed by all kinds of exterior noise and other people's opinions and the way you were raised and what was your faith, what is your gender, what is your ethnicity. All of that informs opinion, has no place in the jury room, right? So
when it's purely the facts presented to you, the interpretation of law, put out all the extraneous factors, they are irrelevant
exactly
to this discussion and this decision.
This moment and this case alone. And so the judge instructs them, once you have deliberated and agree, return with your verdict, which is another word for conclusion. So when people ask me, as you have asked me, my opinion, I won't express an opinion, but I will express a conclusion that I have reached based on an examination of the evidence, because it was my work as an investigative reporter to figure out what is true, what is factual, what is documented, actual fact. And it's just the training that I have. So if I express an opinion, you shouldn't even listen to it. It has no bearing on how you should think. It should not have any influence. And these other people are constantly in the business of trying to influence your thinking. And talk radio has done that. But the sugar high is what's happening right now. Because, here's something I couldn't say before, yes, there is a liberal slant to journalism. Now, let me tell you why. I don't mean capital L liberal, like Democrat, but small L liberal, which means you are there as a journalist to be a bulwark against the abuse of power. That's the way the Constitution and the Federalist Papers decided that the First Amendment of the Constitution would be freedom of the press.
A form of our checks and balances.
Exactly.
Right.
And so this was outside of government. There needed to be a force that checked the power of everyone else. So if journalism looks like they care for the downtrodden, if they care about racial discrimination, if they care about fair housing, if they care about the homeless, if they care, then yes, they are liberal, because this is the admonition, and the admonition I taught at St. Thomas when I was teaching journalism. And it comes down to this. Journalist's job is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. No one should ever use their power to hurt anyone else, to oppress anyone else. So that's the small L liberal approach to journalism. And yes, it is liberal, small L. But this is being seen on all channels except Fox, a sugar high of possibility.
Yeah.
They can't keep it out of their system because they're human beings. And they're not expressing opinions. They're not saying, we're for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. But we're excited about the return of at least expressed return
of possibilities.
Possibilities and the idea of America. Not what America is, but the idea of America.
Really good stuff with Don. Let's do this. When we come back, we're going to lighten it up. We're going to get to what is Don doing now? What does he think of catcher? What does he think of the state fair? Maybe he wants to rip Adam Carter. Lighter moments with the great Don Shelby. We're at the state fair. It's 32 past 12 here on WCCO. Don Shelby is here. Okay, I've not looked at the text yet, but I guarantee once I do, somebody's going to ask, where's Jeff McKinney, and why did the two of you click as well as you did? So take us through when you start here, working with McKinney, the McSkinney, why it works so well, and you guys stay in touch.
Okay, here's a little bit of a backstory to get to that one. So in 1983, I get the news that Dave Moore is going to retire. And they've selected me to replace him. And, of course, everybody's happy at my home, and I am scared to death. Because
it's a tough guy to replace.
I know what's going to come, because Dave Moore was the most recognized person in Minnesota, more than the governors, more than the senators, the most trusted man in Minnesota. And now I've got to replace him. For 3 years, Chad, I got nothing but hate mail. 3 years, to the point that Ron Hanberg said, I'm not sure this is working. I don't think you can do this, because I was no Dave Moore.
Well, can I jump in? How did that personally feel? Where you're doing this, you know the challenge, you know the hard work you have to do, and you go into the mail and you're getting filth and hate and not even in some way respectful comments, comments that have to be debilitating at times.
Yeah. Yes, I got a lot of that, and I would lie if I say that isn't kind of depressing. I didn't mean that I went into a depression, but I wanted to be, I wanted people to like me, because that's the way I grew up. I'm a people pleaser. I just wanted people to like me, and they didn't, and I couldn't figure out why they didn't until I realized it's not so much me, it's just anybody else but Dave. So I got 15,000 letters before email existed, and I kept all the ones that hated me, that had, and I wrote back to each one of the individuals that had return addresses.
How many letters is that approximately?
About 15,000.
My gosh.
And so I had stationery just with my name on it that I bought on my own money. And there were small things, because I didn't have much to say. Little small things, little envelopes. And I mailed out all of those 15,000. And those people said, you are no Dave Moore, and you will never be. All I wrote, Chad, on the card was, dear sir or dear madam, I know that better than you do.
Yes.
And you know what? I got letters back.
Yes.
And then they started watching me.
Right.
And I didn't lie, because Dave Moore was my mentor. He was like a father to me. And he is still far and away the best thing on television that ever happened to the Twin Cities, maybe to television itself. In fact, when he died, Cronkite called me, Kuralt called me, and said, we used to watch bedtime news in the offices at BlackRock because we couldn't believe that this guy was number one and then would make fun of himself on Saturday.
Yes.
So they couldn't figure out what is going on. What kind of popularity does this guy have?
Yeah.
Well, then I get a call from Wendy Paulson, says, would you like to do afternoon drive?
Yeah.
And I said, oh, radio is my first love anyway.
Yeah,
yes, I would love to do that.
What year did you start?
Well, I'm going to put it right on the nose.
Right.
I started the day that Steve Cannon retired, and I took his gig.
Yeah.
And I went, wait a minute.
Another good one.
Another legend. I've got to go through 3 years of you're no Steve Cannon.
Get that stationery.
No. So anyway, in my period of time, I was hanging around CCO, and I'd been doing shows and things, but not doing the show.
Yeah.
I met Jeff McKinney. Staggered by this man's intelligence.
Yeah.
I was just floored by his intelligence, his speed, his repartee, but he was only doing news breaks.
Mm-hmm.
But in between news breaks, this incredible education came out. His knowledge of literature, his knowledge of history. And so I went to Wendy Paulson and I said, okay, I'll accept the gig if you give me McKinney for 1 hour. And mm-hmm. she said, why?
Right.
Why?
Exactly.
He's a news guy.
Yes.
And I said, because you just have to see. If you'll give him, let me do it for a month, and you'll see. And we never talked to each other. We never made notes. We never traded back. We had no idea what the other person was going to say for that hour. And then extended to 2 hours, and then extended to 3 hours. And so he never left. And so I kept calling him Skinny because what's the skinny on the news?
Mm-hmm.
And then he ended up doing a thing for the National Guard in Monticello. And he was introduced, as Jeff Skinny. And he goes, okay, I've arrived now.
Yes.
We are now the McSkinny. And so we, and the kids grew up. We always kept in touch about it, how the kids were doing and how my kids were doing. And now they're all have big families and things like that. And his wife and my wife. It was just a great period of time in my life. And so I still cherish that relationship.
Well, I worked here, I'm saying, about maybe 3 years with Jeff. And I thoroughly enjoyed the professional side of it, the friendship side. I learned how Jeff lived in this house, like in South Minneapolis.
In the basement,
right? He's this refined, dignified, intelligent person, and he had a fierceness about it, you know?
Yeah.
And he had such responsibility during some of the biggest news stories, during weather, and then he goes into his basement, you know? And it's interesting you say that.
But he was doing that, Chad, because his whole family lived in St. Louis.
Yeah, and he was putting kids.
And every weekend, he would leave the basement and go to a very, very nice neighborhood.
Very affluent.
Because his family
very successful.
Had two governors and two steel magnates in that family. So I'd hate to jump off his wallet.
No.
But
no,
you bruise your knees, but he was as plain as you could be because it was a one-room apartment building in the basement somewhere.
Well, it's funny you say that about Jeff because when I came here in 2009, back then CCO Radio did not allow, like this Mike Guy Harrigan, we'll hear way more of Dave, they would not allow the producers or board ops to talk at all.
Yeah.
And I've been at the Fan for 19 years, and so many, like my friend Dan Cole's on right now. That's how Common became Common when he was our sidekick when I was with Dan. And I said, we need to allow that to happen. And there were some old school people here at the station who thought, oh, my God, you're ending radio as we know it. And in the end, when Mick and Wendy wanted to hire me full time, that guy Carter, I said, I'm in.
Yeah.
But I need him on the show
exactly
all the time. And
right.
It was the same thing. They're like, well, he's just a news guy. I go, no, he's not.
Nope.
No, he's not. There's so much more to him. We can have fun. We can talk about the very serious issues. We can have a conversation. Yeah, I can do the solo monologue. I can do that. And then we can go to calls. And maybe the calls work. Maybe the calls don't. But people want to be included in a conversation. They want to understand what's going on. They want to agree with this. They want to disagree. They want to be a part of the group. And that's when radio, I think, really works. You know?
And
the two of you had it. Okay, a couple more minutes before I got to let you go. Your life today, typical week for Don Shelby. What do you do?
Like, 14 hours a day, 6 days a week. I'm working for no money. I'm working.
I don't like that idea.
No, I'm working I'm on now 7 boards. Was 13 boards. I'm on 7 boards. I'm in 3 different capital campaigns, all for charity.
Fantastic.
Nonprofit organizations. do a lot of work on race. I do a lot of work on climate change. I do a lot of work in public health. I am working with an individual. I'm trying to shop a documentary, a great documentary, which you would love to hear about and you would like to be a part of. I'm doing a run at the Chan Essen Dinner Theater with Nancy Nelson.
What are you doing?
We do love letters. This is the third year we've done it. It sells out every. It sells out. We had to add two shows the last time we did it, but it sells out every time it goes up, and it's called Love Letters. It's a fabulous thing. Nancy is unbelievable, and she's unbelievable for this reason. She's a woman who does not cuss. But when A.R. Gurney, who won the Pulitzer Prize for this play, gave all the curse words to the woman.
And so in her life, she does not swear.
And does not cuss. And so the skill, her brilliance of her acting, is it sounds like when she does
natural.
The line, that she does it all the time. The thing I'm mad about is that people who know me well know that I use that language.
I was going to say.
As though it's punctuation marks in a sentence.
So do I.
When I'm not on the air. And I'm skilled. I am a highly skilled cusser.
You're an A player.
And I have no lines of cussing.
Yeah.
And I said, can't you just throw some lines my way?
No.
That's the character. You're buttoned down. You don't do that. Oh, come on. A little bit.
Just a little bit, yeah. Okay, now the folks here at the fair can see it. Your hair is shorter. You've had the hair longer off and on.
Yes.
The last few years. Why?
Yes.
Why is the hair shorter for love letters or just making a change?
I think the last time I cut it was because I was doing a public appearance and I didn't want to look shaggy. But when you spend 60 years having people in the audience tell you to cut your hair.
Yeah.
Or tell you what kind. I one time, Chad, I experimenting. I parted my hair down the middle and brushed it back.
Brought it back.
And so I have kind of a classy
That's right.
look.
Yeah.
Right?
You have good hair.
Yeah. And so I did that, and I got again like 1,000 calls on the call sheet going, "Stop doing that. Go back to." Well, I learned something from that. That's why
People
I always
mean.
Wear the same cut of suit for the 32 years I did CCO.
Yeah.
Never changed, never had bright colors. It was always muted, always wore the same collar, always tied the same kind of knot, because people who are in the audience trust that if you're not trying to trend in some kind of fashionable way, you are grounded.
Yeah,
you are not changing. You're one unchanging spot in the universe, as some people once said. But no, it was very clear to me that I had to stay in my lane. So when you're not being told how to cut your hair, or complaining if you do cut it,
what clothes to wear?
I just went.
Why not?
The hell with you.
Yeah, exactly. You're
you don't like my hair? The hell with you. I never was able to say that on the air.
And you said it right here.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. This was great.
One last thing.
Yeah.
Nine times in Philadelphia, I hate to do this in front of the Republicans, nine times in Philadelphia when Kamala Harris introduces Tim Walz. I knew him when he was a coach. I knew him when he ran for Congress. We had him on CCO when he ran for Congress 30 times. When he was a governor, we had him on 15 times. I knew him as a correspondent with the National Guard as a top sergeant. And I'd always tell him for fun, I said, I don't want to call you congressman or governor or top or coach. And I said, but here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to settle on one. I am never going to call you anything but coach, no matter what position you hold. And if the bones fall the right way, if he becomes vice president, he'll still be coach to me. And I wonder, because I text him from time to time, did he tell Kamala? Because nine times
it's everywhere.
She referred to him as coach.
The signs.
And nobody had ever called him coach to his face.
I've made that point over and over in the last couple of days.
Great.
I got to go.
Yeah, man. I love being with you, man.
A round of applause. Immense respect for this band. Don Shelby on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.